Hello and welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, and mentor. Today's guest is Zoe Newcomb. She's a former registered nurse who has now transitioned to multifamily real estate full-time. Her journey into multifamily began when she realized, and her husband Nick, they had a game-changing realization of the economies of scale. Now Zoe utilizes her past as a nurse to grow their 158-door portfolio with an approach grounded in compassion, teamwork, and hands-on commitment to the behind-the-scenes operations of their business. Welcome to the show, Zoe.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
158 doors. Could you imagine when you joined 2 or 3 years ago that you would own 158 units and you would have jumped into it full time?
Not a chance. Not a chance. You know, you kind of are like in that segment of mind frame of you're doing what you know. And, you know, we started with single family flips. And when we were doing that, it was working okay. And I think you just anticipate that you're going to keep doing that and excel. And we had no idea that there was this other side even possible.
Why multifamily? Why did you want to get out of your day job and get into the real estate business?
So at the root of it, I mean, everyone talks about like the financial freedom side of things. And for Nick and myself, we have some rooted reasoning behind that financial freedom. I personally suffer some pretty severe fertility issues. And I have a endocrine disorder that really makes it difficult for even like my day-to-day aside from fertility, but just like normal living per se.
And I remember that very first call that I was on with you two. And I remember Nick talking about his business, how cyclical it was. I remember because in the wintertime, he doesn't work. And then in the springtime, he's working 24/7 and you're working as a nurse. Lean into that a little bit. Let me know a little bit more about that.
Yeah. I mean, our day-to-day was very routine of like the W-2 lifestyle. I think Nick's schedule was way worse than mine. I at least had like the managerial schedule as far as that goes. But for him, he was at the beck and call of his employer. They were told at like 5 or 6, 7 PM, they would get a text message at what time they would start the next day. And then they weren't told what time they were getting off until they were told like, hey, the work's done, you can go home. And when we're in season for concrete, like that is Monday through Saturday, guaranteed, sometimes Sunday. It just was not conducive for our work-life balance. It was hard on our relationship. And even to the point of like, he wants to be a dad that can coach baseball and soccer and football and do those things. And so he knew even then, like that was not going to be a part of our future and we needed to find something else.
Now, I want you to answer this question honestly and truthfully. When you told him, I want to get into multifamily, what was his initial reaction to that question? To your question?
I think he was open-minded in the sense of like what we're doing is not working, so let's try something different. I don't think he fully was able to wrap his head around like what we were getting into. And it did take some time for him to like come around to it, but now he's like leaps and bounds. So he loves it now.
But when you asked him, was he more like, What are you talking about? Did he even understand multifamily? Because I guess you're more of this problem solver. You're more of the, I want to do this. This is what I want to do. I'm more on the managerial side. I understand that single families, they're okay. It's a great place to start. But how did you convince him? Because you can't just go to someone like Nick and say economy is a scale, because that doesn't even make sense to me nowadays still, because it's not emotional. It may be the most logical reason to get into it. But really, what did you say to him to really convince him to come over to the dark side of multifamily?
He is logical in that sense. And so I think after like joining a couple different mentorship groups and like really just showing him the numbers, when you can do the underwriting and you start seeing stuff pencil out and you're like, wait, we could walk away with $500,000 at sale. Like, I think those big numbers are like what really started to be like, okay, well, let's see if it could work, you know? So that was it for him.
What limiting beliefs did you have before joining Jake and Gino and even before getting into multifamily?
I'm just a nurse is definitely one, right? Like I know the medical field very well, but transitioning that into an operator and like, you know, finding the overlap was definitely there. But like at first it was just like, we're just normal W-2 middle-class people. Nick and I both come from extremely humble beginnings. Nick was a person who was one of 10 people living in a double wide trailer. And I came from a pretty turmoil enriched parental upbringing. So like for both of us, it was just like, why us? Like success doesn't come as easy in that sense, you know?
Did you go to college and major in English? Those are some great words. Turmoil enriched. I like that. Listen, we all have upbringings that are challenging. Some of us that may have amazing childhoods, but we still have, I don't want to call them traumas, but they are. And you know, pain's the same thing. Whether you had a great childhood, but you were bullied, whether you had great parents, but they weren't there all the time, we all bring that over. And we all have limiting beliefs and we all have blueprints about money. Some of us have less than others. Some of us, hopefully, I'm trying to raise my kids with no limiting beliefs on money. But the fact that, you know, when you get into this business, you see other people excelling and doing it. How am I going to find my role into it? What were some of the challenges as you got into multifamily?
Finding the strategic right partners. I think you kind of see this thing where people are so hungry to get a deal done that they just jump in with the first person available instead of just really, really doing your research and making sure that ethically, morally, that, you know, you guys align on a lot of those things. And not just that, but that you have complementary skills, right? It's great that like, I can come in and do the operating side and Nick can underwrite. But like, if we don't have someone that can capital raise, like the deal can't get done, you know, so making sure that you find those balances.
And how did you select your partners? I mean, give me some ideas. Was it based on values? Was it based on skills? Was it based on experience?
Both, all three, I would say. So we approached, so when Nick and I found our first deal, we approached two gentlemen that were in one of our mentorship groups that had been seeing some success, but not just that. They had the business mindset. They were both entrepreneurs for like the last, like, you know, 15 to 20 years and had a lot of credibility in that sense. And we were like, hey, these are guys that we think we could get in the room with and really, you know, grow with. And not only that, like at the root of it, just getting to know them are truly wonderful people. And I just think that, you know, at the end of the day, for Nick and I, it was really important because we did do the capital raise for our first deal, you know. What does it look like when, you know, stuff hits the fan? Are we gonna, you know, be able to make those pref payments still? Are we not gonna do distributions until everyone's money's paid out? Like those are things that Nick and I have found to be very valuable and wanted to align with the people that we partnered up with.
And that first deal, let's go through it from the buy right, the manage right, and the finance right sense. And let's even talk about the capital raise, some things you learned from it, some mistakes you made. What did that first deal look like?
Yeah. So this is a really fun one to talk about. So this is a one that you find on where deals go to die, right? So it was a Crexy, LoopNet, just underwriting to underwrite kind of thing. It had been on the market, I think, for over a year. And Nick and I had actually just listened to one of the Masterclass Mondays. I forget which one it was, but it was regarding townhomes specifically and how those are structured and how you can go and refinance, but when there's like a firewall and all these other things. And so we had kind of just hyper-focused on, well, we should really look out for that. And so going through Crexy and LoopNet, we said, hey, here's one, let's evaluate it. And as we're going through that, Nick has now developed, you know, some better underwriting and really striving there. And so he actually found through the OM that they had a lot of their CapEx in their OpEx and it was killing their NOI. So we're not sure if like that's why people weren't really looking at it or not. And then once we got conversations going, we were able to really get close to what their ask price was based on that. And then we were able to structure some seller financing. They covered, they were really stuck on 2.2 million. And that was like their number in their head. It was too much. We were, you know, for traditional, it probably should have been like 1.8, but we got them to do the 2.2. They covered the entire down payment for 0% interest for 2 years. So that was the kicker there.
Wow. And it's important that you probably went through coaching. I'm sure Bill Hamm helped you with seller financing. And the thing about that is I was just listening to Chris Voss's masterclass on masterclass about negotiation. And what you did was beautiful. The deal is made with the terms. You know, price can kill can kill the deal. But if they're stuck at 2.2 million and they won't get off that 2.2 million, you just have to understand, what do you think the property is worth post renovation? And have you done the calculations? Have you gotten a rehab price after you've repositioned this property?
So we have had some good success. I don't have like the exact numbers of what it's supposed to be when we're finally done, but I can tell you where we're at, and we're like 2 years in. So we pro forma'd for $850 rent on the two beds, and we're already over just under 1100.
And how many units is it?
36 townhomes.
So 36 townhomes. And so it came out to, how much is that per unit? Did it come out to?
Just under, I think $60K is what we bought it for.
So $60K a door, and you're getting $1,100. You actually bought it above the 1% rule pre-renovation. And do you know how much you're going to be into it altogether once it's done?
We raised $300K for CapEx, and that's it. And then the rest for cash flow and the rest.
So you're $65,000, $70,000 per unit all in. And it's going to be post-renovation, $1,100. So there's a few things that I need to add to this. Number one, you don't need to be an underwriting genius to make...
No, those numbers make sense. Yeah.
Without even taking out a calculator, I have a napkin over here. You don't even need behind the napkin numbers, or, you know, back of the napkin, as they like to say. And what I love about it is you probably use the buy right criteria. Townhomes, certain area, vintage. I really have to, it's just sound like a stupid question, but why was this passed over? Is it because they didn't want to come off the price and people wanted to pay a little bit less? And I'm just trying to understand, because if I'd see this deal, and I remember speaking to you specifically about this deal, I'm like, this is a no-brainer. I mean, like, the numbers make sense right now. What is your sense? That was it, the broker not helping out? Was it the sellers? I mean, what was it that made this deal go to die?
It was a combination of both. The seller was absolutely stuck on the 2.2. Like, there was no budging. We had to renegotiate multiple times as far as getting that down to the 0% interest in order for him to get that. That's what was going to make it work. the broker, I think I really got lucky as far as like getting a hold of him and getting him to really respond, because I think for months people had just been trying to get a hold of him, and it wasn't. Like, there was other people within our mentorship groups that were like, hey, we were looking at that deal, et cetera. One thing I want to touch on too with Bill was, I don't know that we would have looked at this deal except prior to underwriting it, we had had a call with him. One of our onboarding calls with, you know, his initial breakdown of what's your market kind of thing. And one thing that was so important for us was, especially for Nick, was to lose that like shiny object syndrome. And he's like, you can pick Dallas as your market and practice and call those people and get, you know, the jitters out, because they're not going to remember you. Right. But really, when you're focusing on your market, be within a 2-hour radius. If it's not going to be you, boots on the ground, of someone that you trust. Right. But for us, it was like, we know we're going to be the operators and boots on the ground. So that's why we picked within a 2-hour radius. And I think now Kokomo is more on the map as far as like the Stellantis plant goes and stuff like that. But we were kind of right on the cusp yet before they had announced that they were going to be building their $2 billion plant. So we kind of caught that wave right before it got to be, you know, well known.
And would you have been able to do this deal, honestly, if there wasn't any mentorship or any coaching involved? Would you have been able to pull it through?
Not a chance.
Not a chance. And what do you think helped you through the mentorship, through the coaching, through the platform? What stood out the most for you?
That's a very multi-layered question. Partnerships, like really key strategic partnerships. We would not have known the people that we partnered with had we not joined the group and gotten the room. I think the education side of that, like, there is something to be said as far as like analysis paralysis, but we would have no clue that, you know, seller financing was an option, that all of these other things were there, you know, and how to even underwrite. So just learning the basics, starting somewhere, and then taking action, right? Like, you have to eventually just take action. And one of like my favorite quotes in that sense is, you know, I think it's something like, failure gets tired in the face of persistence. If you don't give up, you know, we were in multiple masterminds for a very long time before we nailed our first multifamily, you know, purchase. And we just didn't give up. You know, you have to keep at it and You'll get there.
It's interesting. You had a lot of different components in this first deal. You had seller financing. You had capital raising. I mean, taking over the property. How did the capital raise go? I mean, $300,000 may not seem like a lot of money to people who've been raising capital for years, but for somebody who's never done it, somebody who's a nurse and somebody who's driving a truck in concrete, that can be a daunting and overwhelming task. How did you tackle that?
So that's kind of a fun thing too. So, you know, we'd been on the commercial side in a sense without purchasing anything, but we lived in that identity and people knew us that we were in the commercial side of things, even though we hadn't like purchased our first deal yet for, I think, 18 to 20 months. And so one ended up being a relative. It was Nick's brother. Another was a nurse who I had a coworker, and the other was a coworker of Nick's who was also a concrete truck driver. So all of like the family friends thing. And then we actually overraised. We had some extra capital that we had to turn down in one of the Jake and Gino groups too. So it was kind of fun to be able to do that.
And that's so interesting because there are some people out there that say you can't raise from friends and family. And some people out there that say you can. And the reason why you were successful is simple. You told everyone what you did. You didn't join a group and then 3 months later find a deal and say, hey, by the way, I've got a deal. They'll probably go, Zoe, what are you talking about? You're a nurse. You're in multifamily now. You planted the seed and watered the seed. We're probably really annoying to a lot of people, and that's okay because that's how things get done. And the word persistence you used. You're not just looking for deals, you're sourcing capital and looking for deals at the same time. Because when a deal that's online for a year lands in your lap unexpectedly, you're not saying to yourself, uh-oh, where do I go? You know where to go because you've been going to those people, you know, over and over. Do you want to add anything to that as far as the capital raising? Because it's very easy to say, oh, there's a guy that, you know, my worker, coworker, brother. I mean, what did you do really well other than just telling people that, hey, and obviously the deal is an amazing deal. How did you even explain to them about multifamily and about, well, this is, you're going to get your capital return. I'm doing seller financing here. I love the price per unit. It's going to go to $1,100 in rent. People will be like, hold on, Zoe. I don't even know what you're talking about. How did you, I don't want to say convince them, but how did you present the opportunity to them?
Honestly, it was a lot, and I don't want to use the word dumbed down, right? Like that's not, but I would say like tailored to the prospective investor that we had was, you know, you have your sophisticated investors that want to see the cap rate and those numbers, and that's appropriate for those people. For this round, it truly boiled down to what Nick's and my core values and work ethic was. They knew that we had done, you know, single family flipping and that we'd been successful with that. With one of my coworkers, she knew down to me as a person that like what my values were, and that was more important to her than anything else. And she kind of heard me been talking about it just on and off. And one time she approached me and said, okay, so like, what is it that you're doing? Right. And so then we really sat and had some more conversations. And then I said, when I get an opportunity, like I'll present it to you. Right. And that's exactly how it went. She said, okay, let's do it. And so even better was she rolled over a prior nursing 403B from a prior employer, put it into a Roth IRA and self-directed IRA. Yeah.
That is awesome. I'm probably sure that if she hadn't met you, she wouldn't even never have known what a self-directed IRA was. She never would have known what multifamily was. So not only are you affecting and impacting your household, you're impacting her household, Nick's brother's household. It's just amazing once you stop and think of all the families that you can affect and impact through this vehicle of multifamily. Now that as you're going forward, how is your capital raising changed? Are you specifically focusing on healthcare workers and probably people in the construction industry? Let me know what you guys are doing right now.
Yeah. Construction, I think, is hit and miss for Nick as far as that goes. But from the nursing side of that, I'm very active as far as like, I shouldn't say I need to be more active, but I am active on social media. And, you know, you want people to see all of those different aspects of your life. Like they want to see you as a person. They want to see you in that real estate relationship. Right. And I think when you can incorporate that, people truly get to know you as far as like what you provide for them on social media. And I had a call to action a month or two back. And out of the 10 to 15 people that messaged me after that, I think 6 or 7 of them were nurses. So, you know, it's a kind of fun little niche that I'm able to fill. And so just continuing those conversations, as you said, to continue to develop that. It's not our only choice of investor, right? Like, we will have sophisticated investors and accredited investors, but it's definitely a fun place that's close to my heart as far as that goes, that I can show these ladies, more majority are, you know, women, but that there is another side of this. And, you know, I think the fun expression is let your W-2 buy your multifamily, let your multifamily buy your, you know, life and whatever you want to go do for fun. So that's been kind of fun to
I love that. And it's important, Zoe. What I would say is you can continue to speak to the healthcare professional and to the nurse. There are so many out there. They resonate with you. They, you know their pain. They know your pain. You know that, that getting money out of the stock market is probably a wise thing to do going long term, because you don't have control and you're giving them control of the asset. And when you're speaking like that and you can speak to the lingo that nurses speak, and I think it's focusing on that and really delaying your and relaying your message to them is going to pay longer term. And from there, you are naturally going to grow as well, because other people are going to be watching you, because nurses have families and they're going to share with their family members. And all of a sudden, things start getting bigger and bigger. Now, after this first deal, how did you get your next deal?
So we actually had a pretty good dry spell, and not that it was intentional. It was a little bit market driven. It was a little intentional. So to circle back as far as, like, you know, we're our buy right, manage right, finance right, all of these things. And we kind of been letting, so we got a third party property manager who was based a little bit further out of state. Like, he was in state, but not in proximity to Kokomo. And so they hired someone to be on site who was able to work from home a few days, but be on site, you know, here and there. And it was our 36 townhomes, in addition to about another 130 doors with our partners who had also acquired some additional properties in Kokomo. And so we bundled that all together. And after about a year of performance, our property was about 70% occupied with no reason. Like, it should not have been that whatsoever. And we knew the market that we were in, that it should be performing better. So collectively as a group, we made the decision to vertically integrate. And so from that point forward, we were looking for it to be a little bit smoother transition, but it was not well received on the other end of the PM to, you know, maybe coach me through some things, and that it was going to be my operations as far as that went. So we opened up a property management company, and then I quit my W-2 and jumped head in to the management side of that. And so that's what we've been doing for the last year. And then we just closed on our last round of 122 doors, also in Kokomo. So,
and Zoe, when you say a good dry spell, sometimes it does take, after you do your first deal for 36 units, it can be overwhelming. It can be daunting. It's a completely new thing. And everyone has got that shiny object of, I got to get my next deal. I've got to get my next deal. It's very important for people to take a pause and to think of what they've just done. You've done something monumental. Can I say that you're the first person in your family to buy 36 units? Is that safe to say? So you've done something completely different than no one else has ever done in your life. You never went to college to do this. It's something new. Learn how to do the 36 townhomes. That deal is life changing. If you can get $300 per unit from that deal at 36 units, you're looking at over $10,000 a month in cash flow. If you have to wait 6 months to find your next deal, that's okay. Let's focus on this life-changing deal with the cost segregation, with the cash flow, with the cash out refinance that you're going to be able to do, and don't worry about the next deal. And I'm glad that you're focused on it. And that, I think sometimes we lose sight of that. We're always on to the next. And we get very apprehensive if we don't do something.
I think you kind of hit it on the nail head there too. And that's something that I personally take a lot of pride in as far as that goes. Because, you know, you see a lot of people who are closing deals after deals after deals. And from a social media perspective, that is the sexy side of that. I live in the non-sexy side of it, right? Like, I'm going to be the one to make sure, like, the investors get their money back, that I'm going to perform day in and day out to keep delinquency down, you know, occupancy up, all of those things that tie in. And for some reason on social media, that's just not the sexy side of that. And I'm okay with that. But I've really learned that that's my expertise and my strengths, right? So it really has come, you know, full circle on that.
As an operator myself, that is the sexy side of the business. You're getting paid. It's the wheel of the wheelbarrow. And that's why people have been crapping out on deals. Now, bridge debt absolutely has been a big problem. But if you're taking over a 150-unit deal that you have to turn in the next 2 years and you're not able to do that, that's the problem. And it's important to have both elements of it. You want to be able to capital raise and have a great brand and talk about that. But your brand is nurses, vertical integration, responsibility, long-termism, commitment to your investors. Those are your core values right there. And that, what's more sexy than that? I mean, honestly, that is just so powerful to be able to talk about that and to lean into it. And, you know, if I'm going to go with somebody and invest with somebody, I want somebody who's going to manage the asset. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for someone who has total responsibility and control of the asset. And you learned, like Jake and I did, it's great to go on your own. And maybe, hey, when you're at 500 units, you may want to go back to third party. But we started out in the beginning and wanted to learn ourselves and say, hey, this is great. We like this. We don't need to have thousands of units. We can have 300 to 400 units in the first 3 or 4 years. And if they're really cash flowing well, and we're able to control them and put in and implement systems, that will change everything for our long term. You're building the foundation. And if you have a strong foundation on bedrock, when the weather, when the storm comes, you can weather the storm. That's really important. I think everybody needs to hear that message. Now, if you're listening to this for the first time, Zoe, and you're on here, what did you need someone to tell you to be able to get into multifamily? What are some of the things that anybody hearing right now says, I don't think I can do it. Zoe's doing it. Jake and Gina are doing it. Everyone else is doing it. I can't do it. What would you say to that person?
The importance of getting in the room, getting in the right room. Don't be the biggest fish in the room, right? All of those things. And then don't be afraid to get hyper-focused. I think for a long time, Nick and I were down this path and then we jump over here and then go to a different path. And I don't think there's enough focus on getting hyper-focused and letting those other deals that are great go by you, because it doesn't matter, right? Like, you have got to be set up for success, and having the key components around you, whether it's teammates or boots on the ground, that you have a property management company that you trust, that you can really dial in those things, because the rest of it doesn't matter. I don't care that there's a great deal in Dallas, you know, in a tertiary side of that. I don't have anyone there, right? Like, we have people here on the ground that we've been able to be successful, and we're going to continue to build this out here. And that's not to say that it's not okay to look at those deals in those other markets, but you have to be able to get hyper-focused about those as well and get with the right partners, you know?
I think the first thing is you need to work really hard. Zoe joined and came to every event and made sure that she pulled me over and said, can I speak to you for a few minutes? Oh, and Jennifer is here in Manage, right? Can I speak to Jennifer for a little bit? Oh, and Bill is here. And that persistence. Some people may say, you know what? I don't know. I give my phone number out to all the students. She called. She emailed. That's what the community is all about. That's what a mentorship and a group should be all about. It should be about being able to speak to people who lead the group. And if we have information and advice that we can offer to our students, that's what it's there for. But the student needs to take the step towards the leader. And Zoe did that really well on multiple occasions. Every time I went to an event, she was there and she was constantly asking questions. And that's important for you to be locked in. I think the accountability piece is also important. Showing up and doing the work is important. Underwriting deals that you don't think are going to work out, that are going to LoopNet and Crexie and die. And guess what, everybody? That's coming back. Because a lot of these deals, they want $2.2 million. No one's going to give them $2.2 million, so they're going to go to die. But understanding all of the different tools, it's not just one tool. Now, all of a sudden, she had seller financing, she had capital raising, she had JV partnering. All of that comes into play, and understanding that it's education. You need tons of education, but you also need action. Education times action equals your results. And 2 years later, you're like, I'm at 158 units. I can't believe I'm at 158 units. And I just started a couple of years ago. What does the future look like for you? What are you looking to do in the next 3 to 5 years?
Before we touch on that, I want to go back to the accountability side of that too. I think there was a point in which Nick and I were still searching for our people in that sense. And we have gotten a hold of finally two really good accountability groups. And I just want to say in that sense, like you may join an accountability group and it fizzles out, or you may join another one and they're just not your people. Don't stop searching for that, because that is so, so important. Like the room is already so small. And when you start talking to people, they look at you like you've got three heads, right? Like when you're just talking to regular Joes. And so you have to be able to bounce stuff off of each other. And some of our best friends now are from Jake and Gino or one of our other masterminds that we talk religiously at least once a month. You know what I mean? At least. And some of us are in a text group where we're just popping in, checking in how each other are doing. And I don't know that we'll ever do a deal with those people, but that's okay. We're everyone's cheerleaders, and that's so important. So I just wanted to circle back on that.
And that's true. And I think the problem is people aren't in the right room, and they're not in there, and they're not open-minded, and they're more worried about how they look than what they need. Ask questions. It's okay. Get rid of the ego. It's fine. How else are you going to learn? And that's if we don't do that and we don't hold ourselves accountable and we don't put it out there, we're more likely to let ourselves down than let our accountability partners down. That's a sad thing. And I'm sure you're out there going, I need to do a deal because Bill Hamm is hounding me and I don't want to let him down. And I've got a call next week and I got to underwrite three deals. But if you know what, if I'm by myself, I'm like, I've got a nursing job. I'm tired. I mean, Nick's working all the time. I don't feel really good, but I've got to get on a call with Bill Hamm. So I need to do the work. It may sound crazy. I don't understand it. And one last thing before you answer that question, don't be afraid to invest in multiple groups. I invest in multiple different relationships, partnerships, groups, mentors, gurus, whatever you want to call it, every single year, whether I'm trying to become a better speaker, whether I'm trying to grow my business, whether I need a personal development coach, a life coach, couples coaching, whatever that is, don't be afraid to continue to invest in yourself, because you will see that investment pay off down the road. And once you learn something, it's yours forever. And you can share that knowledge with others as well.
Totally. Totally, totally. Okay.
3 to 5 years. Let it rip.
All right. 3 to 5 years, I would like to be at least pregnant with our first kid. That would be a huge, huge thing for us. And I would say doing more joint ventures where we don't necessarily need the capital raise. But, you know, I think that you guys are, you know, great examples of that and what those opportunities offer you. So I would say kids and then maybe 500 doors.
Wow. Kids and 500 doors in that order. Kids and then the real estate. Because the real estate is going to help with the kids, and the kids are going to make the real estate worth it. So I love that. Where can the listeners get a hold of you?
So LinkedIn, Facebook, and email, and I can give that to you guys. Yep.
Yes, please let it rip. What's your email address?
Zoe, Zoey, at responsive, A as in Apple, M as in Michael.com.
That email says it all. Being responsive. Zoe, listen, it's been a pleasure having you on today, and I like your openness. Listen, let's do some joint ventures. A 20 unit deal is great. I don't need to do a 300 unit deal. 150 unit deal, capital raised is great. It really depends upon the deal. And having the open mind is to say this deal needs seller financing, this deal needs some capital raising, and possibly this deal needs some JVing. And I think that's what's amazing about multifamily and about real estate in general. The more tools you have, the more open mind you have, the more options you will have to be able to close a door. Listen, I want to thank you for being a guest on the show and sharing your movers and shakers story. Thanks a lot, Zoe. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Such a pleasure.